Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast Dishing with Stephanie's Dish, where we talk to cookbook authors. Sometimes we talk to makers, and today we have someone that has written a book, and the book is available for pre-order. It's called Cocktails in Bloom, but he is also a maker. His name is Bentley Gilman, and he is the head distiller and forager working at Tattersall Distilling. How are you?
I'm doing so well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I haven't seen you like face to face for a while, so it's good to get my eyes on your face again.
Has been quite a bit.
How is it with you guys being primarily now in River Falls? I know you still have your cocktail room here, but you're migrating that. And I've heard some rumors that maybe you might open something down the road smaller in the Twin Cities, but is there any news on all of those fronts?
Yeah, I mean, right now, yes, production has moved to River Falls. The cocktail room, helmed by Brian and Erica, is still doing really well in Northeast. So please come and see us. It's our last year there, and it'll actually be our 9 year anniversary on July 8th in that space, open to the public. So that'll be kind of a cool thing. So we're planning some kind of little farewell stuff to that spot, but as you know, we've outgrown it. And we're over in River Falls now, but we still have a lot of love for Minnesota, so it won't be long.
So you do you live in the Twin Cities, or are you driving back and forth to go to work at 5:30?
Yeah, I miss most of the traffic, being that I leave when I do.
Why would you leave as somebody who works in a cocktail environment and who is a head distiller? I'm curious why you would go to work at 5:30 in the morning. That seems very counterintuitive to what I would think.
Yeah, well, so luckily I'm not working behind the bar. We have fantastic and qualified people doing that. I'm just making stuff in the back. So we fire up the stills early so we can get the most out of the day. When we're running production, it can take quite a while to run a large batch, as we do daily. So having all that time, 10 plus hours a day, to get everything done. This is kind of the best way for it. Plus, got two little kids at home, and getting home for dinner is very important.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So, you are a really interesting cat. So, when I first met you, I met you behind the bar, but I know that you've always had like this outdoorsy side to you. And I'm curious to hear how that has translated into the book, Cocktails in Bloom. It's 68 pages and it's available for pre-order. And it is a foraged cocktail book. So have you always had like a love of the outdoors?
Yeah, absolutely. Growing up, it just was part of life. And when I think when we first met, I was working up in Dayton's Bluff at the strip club, along with Dan, one of the founders of Tattersall. And yeah, I mean, that was cool because, again, I would be out in the woods early in the morning, come back, wash up, head to work. So it's always been something that I've done, and that people who know me have tried my experiments and weird stuff. And this cocktail book really is kind of the idea was to make the botanicals super accessible and the recipes super accessible too. So this was kind of combing through some of my back pages of recipes and things like that that I knew would be they would prove really well for people when they went about trying them. They could find most everything really just in their backyard. And focuses quite a bit on invasives and stuff too. So that's just kind of that sustainability aspect, removing invasive species from the natural setting as much as possible, and give people different experiences of potentially plants that they consider noxious weeds, and spend all this time and effort putting spray down on them and things like that. If you can kind of just change people's opinions on some of these things, everything has a purpose.
It's funny when you start to look at your outdoor environment like that. And one of the things that I think we saw with COVID that was so nice was everybody sort of reconnected outside and we spent a lot more time outside. I know for some people that has sort of gone away a little bit, but I think some of us have really tried to keep that as part of our like daily living. Can you give me an example of something that would be like a noxious weed in our backyard that somehow you're going to make into a cocktail. Like, I think I saw in the book Creeping Charlie.
So another common name for it is ground ivy, which I feel like is such a prettier name. Its Latin name is not very pretty. It's like Glechoma, so that's not a very nice sounding either. But yeah, so ground ivy, and we are making a ground ivy vermouth in the recipe book. There, it's got this aroma. If you've ever mowed it or walked over it, it's kind of sage-like. It is in the mint family, and it has this kind of almost honey-like character to it, especially when it's in bloom. And I think it's really, really pretty. And just a very, very simple preparation for that. We call it a ground ivy vermouth. Obviously, it doesn't have wormwood in it, so it's not technically a vermouth because that's where, vermouth obviously gets its name, but it's something in that vein. So we take about a, cup of ground ivy clippings, which takes about 30 seconds to clip if your yard is taking over about it. And then you're going to macerate that with about a quarter cup of sugar, less or more depending on your taste, but you can always adjust more on the back end. So I tend to err on the side of caution. And then just toss that in a bowl with the ground ivy, kind of massage it a little bit and let it sit in your fridge for 24 to 48 hours. And then pour a bottle of cheap white wine over it and let it sit in the fridge for another 24 hours and then strain it. You can taste it at that point if it needs a little more sweetness to your tasting. If you got a really dry white wine, you can adjust the sweetness up. But then you can use that in a bunch of things very simply in just a spritz, garnished with a little Creeping Charlie or ground ivy. Or you could do, it's really fun in a martini, really simple martini. But it's also just really amazing to kind of taste it, and you get the aroma, but you get all these new things going on in its preparation method. And if you make it with NA wine, which is becoming more and more bountiful and available, you can have a really awesome NA option. And that's really kind of the other fun thing that has occurred. Because obviously, Tattersall, we're known for spirits. This book also gave us the opportunity to, each of the botanical headings has its own, we call it a free spirited selection. So there's different preparation methods. Some of them have their own wild pan, wild bar item. And some of them use the wild bar item, but in a different mocktail or NA selection. So that's been pretty fun too.
I feel like I'm totally going to do this because my neighbor and I were just lamenting her amount of Creeping Charlie, and she has an organic yard and there's flowers on it right now. It's actually kind
Oh,
of pretty.
yeah, it's prime time right now. Yeah, it's anytime I've gotten the opportunity to talk about the book, I feel like that is just one of those set it and forget it, super simple recipes where, you don't have to do a lot of thinking about it. It just requires, oh, that looks good. Oh, that smells good. Throw it in a bowl and pretty much done.
And it doesn't matter what the white wine is.
No, I mean, used everything over the years in R&Ding it. I've used NA wine before. I've used, the cheapest box white wine to make large batches of it for get-togethers and things like that. Really, really doesn't matter. I would err on the side of a drier wine, just because you can always adjust the sweetness on the back
Yeah.
end. But that's really, it's really, the world is your oyster when it comes to this one.
I think I have like. You know how people come over and they bring you wine,
Oh,
and
yeah.
sometimes they bring you the wine that they don't really like at their house, but they think
Yeah.
maybe you'll like it. Like, so I think I have a bottle of crappy, a few bottles of crappy Chardonnays.
Oh, it's gonna be perfect.
Yeah, I'm gonna do this. So you've been at Tattersall for a long time
Yeah.
and have done a lot of cool things with cocktails. Tell me about like how you're all just sitting around and the Forager book came to light, because I also don't think that people realize Tattersall has an amazing app for making drinks.
Yeah, we do. That's kind of just the spirit of Tattersall. One of our guiding principles is redefining expectations. And so that's kind of what we continue to strive to do, whether it's through putting forward an app that's got, 400 plus drinks that is searchable for your through base spirit and the like, or, just sitting around kind of figuring out a way in which to tell the story to people and talk to people. And being that foraging and especially like foraged cocktails has been something that I've always done for myself and for my friends and family, it just was kind of a natural extension of like, sitting around. It was actually 2 years ago, and we're like, should we make a foraged cocktail book? And it just kind of was like, yeah, let's do it, you know? It's again, it's that redefining expectations. It's we've been really focused with the new facility on upping our sustainability game. So it's just kind of a natural extension of those efforts, which has felt really good.
And you, when you think about cocktails and you think about all the resources that are available to you to make cool stuff, did you start with foraging food first, or has it always been a cocktail focus?
Well, when I was a kid, it started with foraging, you know, just like black cap raspberries and thimbleberries and that kind of stuff. So it was very food focused. And then it also kind of grew into this just fascination with differences in plants. Like I remember gathering, I was born close to Halloween, so I think I have like that spooky thing going on. So I would have like jars of potions and things like that of different plants. And over time, you know, got some directions from some people that I knew as a young kid. I had a friend of mine's mother, knew tons of plants. She didn't always know exactly the uses of them, but she could tell you the name of them. And then I could find out about, you know, what they were used for, different things like that. And it just opened this doorway to, oh, wow, there's so much, the earth has so much to offer. And that's just kind of always been something that's been exciting for me. And I can't really ever turn it off. Just when I'm out and looking around, noticing what's coming up and when it's coming up. And it's just this kind of constant running thing that's going on. Walks with me can sometimes take a while when things are in bloom. So
Do you always carry like a knife and a little bag and
it depends on where I am. You know, if I'm going out to a place where I know, you know, harvesting is okay. You know, I'm familiar with the local regulations, or I'm going to somebody's land and they're like, no one's ever been out here to tell me what it is. Absolutely.
yeah.
I will bring a bag. Mostly I just also very much like to take the plants in just visually too. Because I think that is part of the listening that is innate in all of us as human beings. And when a plant draws your attention, it's calling to you. You know, we externalize our psychology on everything in our environment, from tarot cards to tea leaves to whatever is growing around us. And when it draws your attention, there's a reason it's drawing your attention. And maybe it's because it has something to offer you. You know, there's plenty of evidence of late Neolithic hunter-gatherers and even Neanderthals who had, you know, plant material in their teeth and in their satchels that were for the ailments that we can now see they had. So there is this natural language that we can partake in, you know. And sometimes the thing that's calling to you isn't edible at all. In fact, it might be toxic, but that might be teaching you something that you need to learn too.
Yeah, it's you. The way you speak about that sounds very much like the way that Native Americans interpret their environments, the food, their belief systems, the medicines that they use. Did you ever read the book, The Seed Keeper?
I have not, no.
I'd highly recommend it because it's a book written by a Native American woman who's from Minnesota, and she won a bunch of awards. And it's basically the idea of how multiple generations of Native Americans were able to transfer and keep their seeds
Oh,
and
cool.
grow and plant as they were nomadic people.
That sounds
You'd really
amazing.
like it. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds super up my alley. Yeah, I think on a long enough timeline, yes, I completely agree. It has very much that same intention. And I think we go back long enough in our collective history, and at some point, you know, all of our ancestors were living off the land and living in connection to it. And so I think that's something that everyone really yearns for, either consciously or subconsciously,
yeah.
This connection to the planet and to each other through the planet and to the natural world.
When you started thinking about the book, like how long did it take you to write the recipes, write the text?
So a lot of the recipes for the actual different ingredients were close to made. I mean, there were some tweaks because all of these recipes, I say it in the beginning of the book, you can absolutely sub out, you know, whatever spirit you'd like, but these are formulated to work really well with the Tattersall flavors, the Tattersall spirits. So there was some tweaking there to make it just sing exactly with the specific Tattersall spirits. But a lot of these are things that I've made over a period of many years, and kind of tweaked over time. So with some of the finished cocktails, there was some writing. And then just, I feel like I could talk about plants longer than anybody would care to listen. So that was not very much a problem. And yes, there's a bit of storytelling in there and a bit of talking, but it's very recipe driven. So that part came very easily.
Who designed the book or who helped you with the design? Because it's pretty beautiful.
So, yeah. So Aaron Stottlemyre of Mammoth Creative, who is our graphic designer who does all the amazing Tattersall labels. If you see our stuff and you're like, wow, that looks good. That's Aaron.
Yeah.
So he was the creative director for the visuals and did some amazing stuff. And I'll mention all pre-orders of the book before release come with a bandana that has all of the different botanicals that he illustrated for the book on the bandana. It's really beautiful. And bandanas are one of my key foraging tools. I'd probably have a roll of bandanas and a knife in answer to your earlier question about a bag, because I feel like, you know, like a low basket, a handful of bandanas, you can wet them, you can wrap them, wrap things up. It's a nice way to keep things organized, do a little bit of field prep of stuff so that you're not having to do all the work when you get home.
I like this because next week I'm going foraging for my first time with
Beautiful.
Alan Burgo, the forager chef.
Oh, awesome. Tell him I say hey.
I will. And we're going to record some television stuff. And I was wondering, like, should I wear boots? Should I wear like what do I need to bring? What does one bring when foraging?
Yeah, I mean, I would wear pants. I would wear a long shirt, even if it's going to be pretty warm, just because, I mean, I like to get in there, you know,
yep.
I'm ripping through the brambles and whatever. Maybe you'll take a little bit more of a cautious step than I will, but I, you know, I'm going to get all the way up in there. So if I'm going, I'm going to wear a button down shirt and pants.
I love it.
Typically. So
is there something right now? So Tattersall has a million, not a million, but a lot of varieties of spirits, right? You guys
Yeah.
have whiskeys, you have gins, you have vodkas, and you make all of the liqueurs too. You have like so many of those that you use in the bar. And one of the things that impressed me the most and continues to impress me about Tattersall is just the breadth and the variety of stuff that you guys make. It's pretty extensive. And now you're into like the ready to drinks and the seltzers. And are you guys doing any kind of THC items as well?
No, we're not doing any THC beverages, being that most of our production is in Wisconsin now. Obviously there's ways you could do that. But yeah, we've stuck to what we know. There's a lot of people out there doing awesome stuff in that realm, and more power to them. It's fantastic to have options out there.
Yep.
But yeah, that's not something we're getting into. But yes, we do have quite a few spirits. I think we'd have to have some serious SKU rationalization if we were going to add anything more. We always try and add more, but we always have to be like, okay, and now creme de cacao. Do we need to make creme de cacao anymore? Or what, you know, what have you? Because it's at least 40 something spirits at this point. I mean,
it's a lot.
And if you include the one-offs, it's like outrageous, or the cask club selections. It gets a little bit out of hand.
I think my first conversation about low ABV alcohol and low ABV drinks was in Tattersall, or maybe even with Tattersall with Dan and John, just talking about we were moving towards a trend coming out of COVID of people getting maybe a little more conscientious about how much they had drank during those closeted times.
Absolutely.
And people wanting to come out of that and kind of reinvent themselves, and whether they were getting sober or just trying to be more intentional about when they drank. How are you guys addressing that moving forward? Because we are seeing trends that younger people are just drinking less.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you'll see that in our canned cocktails. They're 4.5%, 100 calories. So, it's just that exactly what you're talking about there, where you can have one or two, feel great, be active, and whatever people want when they walk through the door, it behooves you to make it happen for them. So if people want low ABV beverages, great. That's awesome. That is the hospitality, and that's the service that just needs to happen when you're doing the thing.
I think people too, like we started out with so many breweries, then we're adding all the distilleries, then we added the cideries. And one thing that you guys always did so well that makes me feel a little sad that the cocktail room's going to close is I thought you really approached hospitality in a super thoughtful way and really offered that up to the guest. Like, I never went and sat at your bar and felt like it was too she or too exclusive, or I couldn't ask questions about what it was that you guys were pouring me. And I think sometimes that's kind of gotten
I
lost.
do think it can get lost in those special places that still hearken to that level of service. And it's not dead. It's just across the river. If you come on over to River Falls. But yes, I do thank you for saying that. That means a lot. It's what we strive for, with Dan's background, with where we've worked and everything like that. The hospitality is top tier. It's just making people feel heard, understood. It's the opportunity to give somebody a really special time. And yeah, I think more and more people are nostalgic for that enough so that it's going to make a comeback. It's got to make a comeback. It's
Yeah, I
human
hope
nature
so.
to it's a Cinderella story.
And if we talk about your place in Wisconsin, it's very beautiful. It's very large. I was
It
so like
is.
surprised how big it was. And it doesn't feel, it's kind of in multiple different areas, so it doesn't feel like it's just a cavern, but it is really large. Like you guys have huge facilities to do lots of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. The outdoor amphitheater, the event center, just the distillery proper, the restaurant, everything. Yeah. And the nice part is it's not far. Like, that's the crazy thing. It's as somebody who drives it, twice a day, it is a 35-minute drive when there's not traffic. It's a very, very simple, if you were trying to drive from St. Paul to get dinner in Minnetonka, it'd probably take longer.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. All right, before we let you go, another area of foraging with cocktails that seems to work really well is the conifers. So,
Yes.
can you help us understand like something we might have in our yard that or our
Sure.
cabin that could be made into something good?
Absolutely. Well, we've got a couple representatives in that category in the book. One of them preparation method is a little bit easier than the other. But we have a recipe for a spruce tip tonic in there that's bittered with dandelion root. So obviously everybody's got dandelions. Most of us have spruce trees around. It also works with fir trees as well. And it's using the young tips to make a tonic syrup using dandelion roots as the bittering agent. That's a little more involved, but the other one is just taking some Eastern white cedar or arborvitae, the pyramidal ones that you see kind of like as hedgerows and things like that. Taking about a half cup of that, rough chopping it, putting our tight line vodka over that and letting it sit for 1 to 3 days, just tasting it every day, and then using that to make a really awesome cedar maple Collins. So just like 1 to 1.5 ounces of that, a little quarter to a half ounce of maple syrup, topping with soda water. It's just like really interesting flavors. The cedar and the maple work so well together. But yeah, there's definitely a lot. Like I said, you know, Earth has a lot to offer. And this really, this book is a, is an invitation, but it really just scratches the surface. And it's hopefully it piques people's interests, generates connection to the planet. And, you know, 'cause that's what it's all about. You can't be good stewards of something that you have no connection to. So
I love it. We're talking to Bentley Gilman. Yeah. He is the head distiller at Tattersall. And the book is Cocktails in Bloom. I'll put a link in the show notes and you get your bandana if you pre-order. The yes. book will actually be shipped in June. And I'm really excited to talk to you. This is something really cool. And I'm going to do what you said. And I'm going to send you pictures of the Creepy
Please
Charlie
do.
One. I'm going to do that today.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. And we're going to have some events associated with the book launch too. So just everybody keep your eye on the socials and you can go to our website and follow along.
All right. I love it. Thanks, Bentley. I appreciate
Thank
being
you so
here
much
today.
For your time and interest.
Yeah.
Thank
Have
you.
A great day.
You too.